This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com. Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm one of the producers here at the Briefing Room. 2 weeks ago, we talked to people in Wakefield in Yorkshire, where most people voted to leave the European Union. And since it's only fair to get the other side, this week, David Aronovich and I were on the streets of Lambeth in South London. Now, Lambeth is a place where nearly 4/5 of people voted remain. And we wanted to know how those people felt about being on the losing side.
This is one of those kind of great arterial thoroughfares through South London heading towards the city. And we're standing on alongside one of the more interesting terraces along this road. It's rather beautiful houses if they were to be done up. And from the third floor of one of them, right in the middle, there are two flags hanging. One is a gay pride flag and the other is something you hardly ever see in Britain, which are the stars of the European Union being flown by a private individual. Rare enough to make you wonder what kind of person lives here.
I'm Gareth Rees. I'm 27 years old. I'm a student. I was born in Dulwich, just down the road. I was an official observer from the Remain campaign at Brixton Recreation Centre, where the count went on.
On the 23rd of June, 48% of Britons, 16 million people, voted to stay in the EU. 2 weeks ago, I was in Wakefield in West Yorkshire, where I heard from voters in favour of exiting the European Union. They told me they were taking back control of their country. They won. But what about the losers? Tonight, for the Briefing Room, I'm starting off in South London in the borough of Lambeth, the area that most overwhelmingly voted Remain. What do the attitudes of these voters tell us about Great Britain today?
I mean, I really was knocked sideways by the result. My reaction was incredibly visceral and emotional, panicked, really. It's like losing friends, suddenly being on the outside. The vision of the future that we take for granted now, I feel like that's been stripped from me.
Gareth seemed to be experiencing a discovery that Britain was not quite the place he'd thought it was. A place of celebrating diversity and mobility. A place exemplified by the open plan building made out of shipping containers, housing hipster cafes, a cinema, start-up businesses, where I met Devon Thomas.
There's supposed to be a complex of inner-city motorways called the Ringway Network, and east, west and north, south.
Devon Thomas works on business development and is a local activist, part of the Afro-Caribbean community that has, for more than half a century, called this neighbourhood home. Officially, he's the director of the Brixton Neighbourhood Forum. Unofficially, they call him Mr. Brixton.
I'm from Jamaica. I was born there and I came with my mother in the middle 50s.
Do you have any nostalgia for the Britain of your childhood and youth?
It's very difficult as someone, the kind of person I am. Because, yes, inevitably, it was my childhood. I remember coming to London. There were lots of bomb sites. London was our adventure playground. We were able to kind of crawl through fences and go and hunt for shells and bullets.
And yet the Britain of the 1950s could be a very scary place for a young boy from Jamaica. When we spoke to Leave voters 2 weeks ago, we found a fondness for the past when Britain was a kinder, safer place. Devon Thomas has a different set of memories.
Famous fascist from the 30s, Oswald Mosley, he campaigned in Notting Hill in the 50s and targeted immigrants as the problem to Britain's social and economic upheavals.
KBW.
Keep Britain White. And in fact, there was a big Mosley will win graffiti at the end of Summerlayton Road, where we'd established our community. And at the time, I wasn't clear what it meant, because I was only a small child. But that graffiti stayed there for years. My dad told me about when black people were being attacked in Notting Hill in the 50s, and a delegation of van loads of people like him went from here to Notting Hill, and they chopped up some teddy boys, and the teddy boys stopped attacking black people.
That Britain has gone. Devon Thomas has lived in this area through decline, through race riots of the 80s and neglect, and more recently regeneration, and now it's an area back in fashion. It's not the metropolitan Shangri-La that some people imagine. A third of its working-age population lives in poverty. But for reasons we hope to find out a bit more about in this programme, it's a place that was very comfortable with the European Union. Four-fifths of people in Lambeth voted to remain.
I was on the road the week before the referendum. I was down in places like Chester and South Wales and a lot of places that voted to come out. And, you know, I'm going to be quite upfront. I think a lot of them are the people that the Labour Party have let down. But we've gotten very little out of what's happened in the last 30, 40 years economically.
But you could make an argument that people, some of the people here who voted to stay in the EU have been every bit as lacking in representation, but they don't somehow seem to turn that into a vote to cut off from the European Union.
But I think there's things that have been happening here. People have been able to get involved in a lot of local community activism. They're taking charge of their parks and running them. There's a kind of democratisation, a political revolution going on in places like here. So you may not be part of politically engaged, but you engage with your neighbourhood.
Are you saying that you have a feeling that some of the areas which voted to leave are much more fatalistic? In other words, they don't have the internal resource to create optimistic circumstances for themselves?
I would agree a lot.
In the run-up to the referendum, I only spotted a single Leave poster in a window anywhere near my flat in Brixton, but there were rows of remains.
Rosamund Irwin is a columnist for the Evening Standard, a South Londoner by upbringing. The day after the referendum, she penned this column in which, slightly tongue-in-cheek, she said she might never leave Lambeth again. A Leave vote seems to be turning back the clock, she says, and the past is the past. Nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there.
During the general election, there was much sneering about the capital's liberal metropolitan elite. An ejected UKIP councillor declared that Londoners were too educated, cultured and young to vote for her party, and perhaps we all felt a smidge smug. That attitude doesn't win us friends, but nor do I think we should be embarrassed for holding those values. Hooray that we don't dream of returning to the 50s, that false Arcadia of triangular sandwiches and homophobia.
How does she feel now, a month on?
I still feel rather angry about it. And I also think that the 48%, of whom I am clearly one, now feel very removed from this country. If you're in Brixton, you perhaps think now, oh, actually, maybe I have got a bit more in common with people, I don't know, in Paris than in Preston, maybe. We keep being told to get over it. Given that people have been campaigning all this time to leave the EU, that seems very bizarre to me that we're simply supposed to accept it when they, who have fought for it for so long, never sort of gave up on it all that time.
So the question is, what to do if you're a Lambeth Remainer, most of your neighbours voted to stay, but you're stuck in the middle of Leave Island? As Devon Thomas said, political engagement in this part of London is high. So high that it even has its own alternative currency, the Brixton Pound.
It's a kind of voucher you can only spend with local businesses. I meet the currency's manager, Tom Shackley, in the group's new headquarters come Strollin' Cafe. Tell me a bit about how you came to be here. Where did you come from?
I'm from Bristol originally. I'd actually been living abroad for a few years. I lived in Spain, and I actually also lived in Brussels, where I was working for a member of the European Parliament for a couple of years. So I do have some background there. The reason that I wanted to come to Brixton was because I had some friends here. It just felt like a place actually sort of manageable to live in London. People really care and identify with living here. They're very proud to live here, and they're very sort of keen to use whatever time they have available to invest into the kind of community life that you do see here.
They might say of London, some of the people that we've interviewed, London is not actually a British city. Or in London, nobody knows their neighbours and so on. In London, it's not like it is round here.
That's an outside caricature of London. I don't think that's actually true. But I do think that identity is a major factor here. And I think this is something which has been going on since the 1950s. You know, what is Britain? That's where, you know, Farage is so good, isn't he? Because he says that it's all about, you know, going back to being the great trading nation, even though we don't have an empire on which to do it this time. I mean, it's just a bit of a joke, isn't it? But it's a bit of a joke in a way in which I think people have been lied to, I think they've been manipulated, but I'm not angry at them because I definitely see them as victims as well. One of the, I think, prevalent feelings was just that how can there be so many millions of people who think so differently? You know, this wasn't a sort of friendly vote. It felt nasty, and it felt like a dividing line had gone down.
So you found yourself asking whether this was your country anymore?
I wouldn't say I was asking if it was my country anymore, and I'm certainly not going anywhere, and I don't think the answer is to sort of embark on either a flight or on a kind of culture war. But we've been a divided country for a very long time, and it was just a very aggressive bubbling to the surface.
Does it not bother you at all that in this borough, only 40% of the population are white British?
It doesn't bother me at all.
Not in the slightest. You never say to yourself, my God, this is a alarmingly diverse place.
I mean, it's clearly a diverse place. I wouldn't call it alarmingly diverse because I don't see any evidence of what I should be alarmed at. I don't see, okay, what are the sort of caricatures that are associated with very diverse areas, things like community breakdown, high antisocial behaviour, and you know, these are things which I don't see around here. And if I do, then I think the problems are more likely to be caused by economics, not social reasons.
What people here say is that, yes, we have all kinds of problems, but the problems are not the problems of immigration, and they're not the problems of diversity, and they're not the problems of people's taking our jobs and so on. And then they all blame the politicians. So, whereas you might have a kind of blaming the South or blaming London or blaming the migrants in other places, in more kind of Brexit places, as far as I can see, what you have here is, yeah, there are problems here, but you just blame the politicians, it's their fault. This borough is 40% white British, 10% black Caribbean, slightly more than that black African. There's more than 150 languages spoken. And what you find is there's not just an acceptance of diversity and immigration, but a proud defence of it. Rashid Nix is a local Green Party leader who grew up on an estate in Lambeth and got interested in politics but turned off from the main parties. We sat in a new bike shop cum cafe. Everything is also a cafe round here. Rashid was distracted.
As you see on the streets of Lambeth, it's such a diverse area. I keep looking outside the window because I'm seeing all these different people walking past. Ladies going past right now, these are Somalian ladies, and they'll be speaking in Arabic. Behind them is a white lady, English white lady maybe. She might be Polish, you don't know. But people coexist here. We don't really mix. We coexist. There's a difference, you know? There's a difference. No one complains about the other because we're all the other. What the result really did for me, it confirmed something that a lot of us had suspected for many years, you know, that there is an underlying, I won't say racism. Yeah, I think the term's scapegoating. I think that's the correct term.
And that's what you felt the result partially showed. You felt that some of the people, of course, we can't generalise about 17 million people, but some of the people voting were voting to effectively say it's their fault.
Absolutely. It's a lot easier to just, you know, blame somebody else than actually sitting down and doing the real research that would lead you to conclusions that maybe, just maybe, current political model that we're operating under, where, for example, council housing is for sale, but they're not building any replacement housing. So, of course, there's going to be a shortage of housing. So rather than you blame, you know, government policy, oh, blame the immigrants, because they come over and they get all the flats, which is absolute foolishness, because, you know, there are people that we see on the streets of Brixton who are themselves immigrants, who are homeless.
I put to Rashid Nick some of the exact same questions that we put to Leave voters in Wakefield 2 weeks ago, and you can hear that programme on the Briefing Room podcast feed. The answers in Remain land were perhaps predictably very different.
Let me try a couple of things on you. Just say something and you tell me what you think about it very briefly. Death penalty, favour it or against it?
I'm against it. But as a black man, as an African Caribbean man, the amount of times I've been stopped and searched and accused of things that I hadn't done, to know that there was a death penalty in place, I could see it just playing to the mob mentality of this country. No, against it, absolutely against it.
The royal family?
The English royal family, who are German and Greek, I believe. I think they're onto a pretty good hustle, you know. I'm not against the royal family. I just think that, you know, for the amount of money that that they claim off the state, what do we really get in return?
What do you think about feminism?
Were you talking about women's equality? Absolutely, all the way, yeah.
I didn't just pick those questions randomly. According to polls done after the referendum by Lord Ashcroft and researchers at the London School of Economics, those kinds of attitudes are broadly typical of Remain voters, who in general are against the death penalty, sceptical of the royal family, pro-feminism, pro-multiculturalism. These, not economic status or even age, were the greatest indicators of a Leave-Remain vote. Gareth Rees, the student and Labour Party volunteer we spoke to at the start of the programme, says he knows only a couple of family and friends who voted Leave.
When you looked, and you will have seen lots of people being interviewed, the BBC alone did, God knows how many, Vox Pops and so on, and you saw the reasons that people were giving for leaving. How did you feel about them?
Perhaps I was guilty of occasionally falling into the metropolitan elite trap of looking down possibly on some of the arguments that were put forward and that they believed. But I also feel like they were lied to. And it's only now that suddenly everyone vanishes and none of the answers are presented and none of the promises are gone through on.
And yet they don't seem to be bothered by that.
That's interesting. I think that there are people who are bothered by it. I mean, here I am telling them what they think. That's not what I mean to be doing. I think that their concerns are legitimate. I just don't think that the EU has anything to do with those concerns.
One quite large group of Lambeth residents will be most affected by the UK's withdrawal from the EU. Europeans. 14% of this borough's residents were born in the EU outside of the UK. The top countries? Ireland, Poland, and above all, Portugal. In fact, this area around Stockwell, stretching up towards Vauxhall and the River Thames, is known as Little Portugal. In this cafe, people are eating meat stew and bacalhau, salt cod, and drinking Portuguese beer. Upstairs is the headquarters of a Portuguese sport and cultural club. Trophies and photos line the wall. The club's vice chairman is Rui Reis.
I was born here in London, obviously in the area of Stockwell, St. Thomas's Hospital. I've got one brother. My parents are from the island of Madeira. They're now been here for 43 years. They didn't expect to be here for 43 years. The plan was only to come for like a few years, like 5 years or 10 years, get some money, build their home back in Madeira, but they're still here 43 years later.
Now, 43 years later, if my maths is right, 43 years takes us to just before we joined the European Union,
correct,
the EC as it then was. Yes. So, in that time, how has the Portuguese community changed in size, in dynamic, anything?
from my parents' time when they told me there was only two or three restaurants. Now this area, Stockwell, Vauxhall, is mini Portugal, and it keeps growing. There's more and more people from Portugal now coming over to London because, obviously, the situation of the euro. It's so difficult, so people are coming, especially in the last 5 years, it has increased quite a lot.
And as a report from the Home Affairs Select Committee said this week, the Leave vote may encourage ever more European migrants to move to the UK before the official exit, in the hopes that they can stay on. What does Rui Raich, and remember he's a native Brit, think about the incomers?
One of the things when we talked to people who were wanted to leave the EU was their feeling that jobs that could be done by native-born English people like you and me, were now being taken by people from the EU, new people from the EU.
In the industry where I've been, basically, I work in a casino now, but before that was hospitality. Most of the people who I worked with were actually Polish. I had a good team. They were flexible compared to us native English people who, if I say, can you do overtime, it always got declined. But if I go to a Polish person, they will say yes, okay? And they will work, okay? They are hard crafters. It's a fact. They actually work harder than an English person. If they're willing to put the hard work in, good for them. That's what I say. Simple. I ain't got a problem if someone took my position as long as they worked for it. And if they've worked for it, yeah, great job.
Just one quick question. Your parents, do they regard themselves as British or Portuguese?
They always say they're Portuguese. And even myself, if people say, what's your nationality? I know I was born here, but I also say I'm Portuguese. After the vote, I felt let down. I felt let down because if they've got an idea, let's kick out the foreigners, we don't need them. And we heard it on the news, the amount of abuse Polish people have. And it's not just Polish. In this area, I've seen Portuguese people being treated badly by saying, get out, you scum. You don't belong in this country. Take that flag down. Yeah, I felt let down, especially by native English people, British, we say.
That was Rui Raich ending that report from Lambeth. I should just stress, of course, that those were a half a dozen voices out of the score or so I spoke to out of 16.1 million Remain voters. But nevertheless, I think interesting. Now, joining me in the briefing room are Stian Westlake, Executive Director of Policy and Research at the think tank Nesta. He's been studying the Brexit vote. And Cordelia Hay of the polling and research company Britain Thinks. Cordelia Hay, what stood out for you in that report?
There were two things that I was particularly struck by. I was struck by Gareth flying his EU flag proudly. And, of course, we saw in the days after the referendum, we saw protests, we saw people with the flag painted on their faces. We love you, the great pun there. But I think there's perhaps a bit of a misconception there that all Remainers were in love with the EU, and I think they certainly weren't. I think a lot of Remainers were making their choice on quite a practical set of factors, and actually a lot of Remainers could see problems with the EU that many leavers could. They thought of it as bureaucratic, potentially a waste of money, and there were potentially some concerns about uncontrolled immigration, not necessarily immigration per se. And the other thing I was really struck by was hearing some of the Remainers talking about the leavers and sort of some of the language that they were using there. They were lied to, they didn't do their research, they didn't look at the facts. And we've seen quite a lot of that potentially slightly paternalistic language used to describe leavers recently. And actually, there's a bit of a sense that some Remainers are slightly in denial. There was this narrative after the referendum that of regret and buyer's remorse, when actually a lot of leavers are feeling pretty optimistic and happy with their decision. So perhaps Remainers need to take a look around them and actually kind of read the room and understand that the decision has been made and people aren't likely to go back on it.
Stian Westlake, one of the issues that came up, and if you looked into it more carefully, but the word was used, was the word identity. And taking Cordelia's point that, by and large, it wasn't sort of some kind of love for the European Union in itself, what you saw there was an idea of who they were and their attitude towards the world, didn't you?
I thought that was very interesting, particularly when you asked those questions about these underlying values like approval or disapproval for the death penalty or for feminism or for the royal family. And I think one of the things that we see when you put all of those things together is you get a group of opinions, a cluster of opinions that people have looked at before. And there's some very interesting work by the American psychologist Jonathan Haidt, who's looked at what he's described as these two political cultures, one of which is the more traditionalistic, the perhaps more authoritarian, and the other is the more cosmopolitan, the more liberal attitude. And it's very interesting how we're seeing that sort of cluster of cosmopolitan, more liberal beliefs being associated with some of those Remain voters.
Now, Haidt was very concerned, as I recalled it, to try and get liberals in particular to understand the values of people who weren't necessarily liberals. You also were a part of the discussion after the Wakefield programme. And one of the things that's very striking, in a sense, the Remainers cast it a lot in terms of immigration and so on. But actually, there were just sort of different attitudes to what a community consists of and what a history consists of, didn't you think?
I think that's very true. There was a sense of community and of harking not necessarily just back to the past, but almost to an ideal of what a community in Britain or in Wakefield specifically would be like, which was very different from what we heard in Lambeth just then. And I think one of the real challenges, and this is one of the points that Jonathan Haidt made, is that the typical kind of liberal, the typical cosmopolitan, is not necessarily very good at getting inside the heads of people who don't think like them. And particularly, there's a kind of almost intolerant tolerance, a sense that if you don't share these liberal views, you must be a bad person, you must be a kind of close-minded person, or even perhaps a racist.
One of the things that was interesting was the way in which the Remain votes clustered in the big cities and so on, but also not just in the big cities, in places, some places which were traditionally Tory. Tunbridge Wells was a Remain place. Guildford was a Remain place. This suggested some very interesting things, didn't it, Cordelia, for the political parties in the future, which was, I mean, let me just give you my kind of take very, very quickly. You respond to it, which is for the big political parties, the Conservative Party is obviously a coalition of business-minded and internationalist-minded people with very traditional people. And the Labour Party seems to be now an impossible coalition of metropolitan liberals with people who simply don't share their fundamental values about what a society is.
I think that's right. I mean, I think all politicians face a massive challenge, not least in rebuilding trust after the referendum on all sides. But the chasm is certainly biggest when you look at Labour supporters. This really growing gulf between those in London and those in the Labour heartlands, those in the north of England, and just feeling completely at odds with one another.
Steer my slate. Looking at the age and education profiles of the Remainers in particular, well, both sides actually, you could make out a kind of rather cheeky argument that the referendum, from the point of view of the Remainers, just happened 10 years too early. And if they'd managed to hold on for 10 years, they would have outlived the Leavers and so on. Do you think that's true? Do you think that they represent change? Or actually, would we have recreated new generations of more traditionally minded voters?
Well, it's certainly true if you look at the demographics that the Leavers were a much older group, the Remainers were a much younger group. I guess there are two things that might have changed the split and given Leave a victory had the referendum been held in 10 years' time. One, which is something you hear a lot from Leavers, is that maybe the situation in the EU would have got even worse. And the other possibility is maybe some of these young non-voters or young people who did vote but weren't sure might change their mind as they got older. But I think my gut feeling is that this may be something like other votes on cosmopolitan liberal issues that we've seen in the past in other countries, like on things like gay marriage, where actually over time attitudes do change. So this may well have been something where 5 years, 10 years, 15 years could have made the difference.
Cordelia.
I think something that really sums up Remainers versus Leavers is sort of openness to change versus being more concerned about change. And what you need to remember is that openness to change can change as people get a little bit older, and they can be more resistant and more worried about change as they get older. So if the vote had been held in 10 years' time, there's nothing really to suggest it would have been different.
Thank you very much. That's all we have time for. Thanks to Stian Westlake of Nesta and Cordelia Haidt of Britain Thinks. And remember, if you're interested in the other side, you can listen to our programme on Leave Voters in Wakefield. It's available as a podcast or on the BBC iPlayer, as are all editions of The Briefing Room. Until next week, goodbye.
David Aronovich presented the briefing room. The producer was me, Mike Wendling, and the editor was Helen Shreve. Now, David mentioned the companion programme about those who voted Leave. That's still available as a podcast or on the BBC iPlayer. And if you like this programme, why not leave us a review? And you may also be interested in another podcast from the BBC, The Inquiry, from our colleagues at the BBC World Service. Thanks for listening.
Innovation bringt die Welt seit jeher voran, doch sie birgt auch Risiken. In einer Zeit, in der die Welt neue Energielösungen benötigt, stellt sich AXA XL den Risiken. Als einer der führenden globalen Versicherer setzen wir ständig neue Maßstäbe, um die Energiewende zu beschleunigen.
AXA XL. Risiken eingehen für eine Zukunft voller Möglichkeiten. Diese Anzeige stellt weder ein Angebot oder eine Aufforderung dar, noch ist sie eine Beschreibung von Produkten oder Dienstleistungen von AXA XL.